that in the beginning, the Sangha was really important because they were practicing and you got to experience what it was like to be in a room with others practicing. And then it's really a gift and to have a group of people that are all working with their minds and trying to experience Mahamudra or enlightenment, right? And we're all here together and we're really putting our energy towards that. And then they become like your brother and sister and ways of, here they can bounce back, they can mirror back, they can, because they're also doing the practice right along with you. So it's kind of it's hard, it's lonely when you don't have the group support. And there's probably, as far as like development too, you have more chances to develop when you're with a group because there's others to point out for you, like, what are you doing? What's a check in your life? Check feedback. You need feedback. Otherwise, I mean, it depends on, you know, what people's proclivities are and what they want in their life. In Santa Fe, we have a small Sangha, but we have a Sangha, and we support each other, and it brings us back, and it connects us with the lineage, with that idea, you know, we're all in the stream, and we're not isolated, and but Santa Fe also has that side to it, too, where it's a quiet nature place. I often, my practice in the morning is I take my dog in the mountains, and I meditate there. I would normally meditate at home, but because I'm dropping my daughter off right by the trailhead, it just makes sense that I go, and it's really special in the morning, especially. And the nature likes it, I think. Mm. I like
birds
it.
Come around when you meditate.
Yeah, it's interesting to see all the, to be connected also with that nature sangha too. Those are other, it's like a whole other part, but then you have your people sangha too.
Then you got your bodhisattva sangha.
So. You have your bodhisattva sangha. Yeah. Yeah, it's in the three jewels for a reason. It's because you're not alone and you don't necessarily want to be alone either. I don't think we're ever separate entirely. And then that gives you the push. How else do you get information too? I mean, I learned so much from my friends and that became Buddhist teachers that shared. It's a constant share of exchange, and you kind of, you really need that if you're on a path. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that for me, it's so clear because there was me running around alone when there really wasn't a sangha. And I did 8,748, and I thought, that's pretty good. I think I'm done. And then there's me with a sangha. And the sangha is not going to let you, like, make up stuff like that.
That's true.
And
we keep you in check.
And I think that in New York, it was a unique time because, again, it was still the early days for Diamond Way in the U.S. Even though in Europe it was more established, so we could go to Europe.
Oh, yeah.
And there could be 1,000 people in a tent and empowerments with Chetri Rinpoche and all kinds of stuff going on and people finishing Nundro left and right. But in the U.S., nobody had finished a Nundro.
No.
And so...
We were working hard.
And so we were working hard. We were like, we're going to do it, our whole group, our Sangha. We're going to be the first. You know, New York, we're the best. So we were going to be the best at Nundro. So we finished, you know, we were the first to finish Nundro in the U.S., like our Sangha, our local
our
Sangha.
Little, yeah. Vajra Pride.
And it was and it really was family. We would get together every single, then Kim and I lived at the center in Brooklyn for 7 years. And every Saturday was
all day meditation.
People coming over,
8 hours.
And eating and cooking and meditating together. And often we had guests. I think that Lama Ole was supporting us. He knew we weren't quite making rent. So everywhere around the world, he'd travel and he'd say, you've got to come see the Brooklyn Center. It's amazing. And so we always had these guests coming and they'd spend, you know, $15 a night to stay on our floor. in the Gompa. And so that basically, you know, helped make rent, but it was this wonderful exchange. And also in New York, we had something like 20 nationalities represented, you know? So when you're all cooking and cleaning and making a mess and then sometimes not cleaning together, you know, it's a real opportunity to see the different cultures come out. So you've got, you know, Germans and Hungarians, like, or Russians and Germans, like totally opposite Polish ends of the German spectrum. Yeah. So somehow it's always Germans and Polish or Germans and
or Indian. Russians. Yeah.
But,
Italian.
But it gave us the chance to really see this, and Sangha is, part of the magic of Sangha is it's like we're these kind of rough stones and we're clashing against each other. It's not necessarily, you know, once the honeymoon is over, Sangha can actually be a lot of, it's like family, and finding your family is wonderful, and then it's kind of like family. Like, oh geez, like family. So there's a lot of like,
arguing,
you know, knocking the little rough spots off, and as these stones are in the tumbler, they start to polish and shine. And
I think
it's a similar experience with teaching, because I was asked, Ole had asked me to teach a few years back, and I wasn't ready because the recession was tough. Financially, I was in a rough patch, and our daughter was young, and things, you know, you really have to be in a place of surplus on many levels. And it's and you can't really lie. I think, you know, it's one thing to kind of study and learn the Dharma and then look good up there and, you know, sort of like wear nice clothes and do your hair. And it's another thing to study so that you know what to say and in what order. But the big one is really because when you find yourself in a teacher role, and when we say teacher in Diamond Way, we're talking travel teacher, and for a while we played with the words. Maybe it's just friends who travel, you know. Teacher is not the right word. We have a teacher, and that's Lama Ole, and also the Karmapa. And then we had, you know, the rest of our teachers have pretty much passed away. Shamar Rinpoche and Chechu Rinpoche and Hana Naidal. And we've actually lost a lot of teachers. There's, you know, we still have Jigme Rinpoche and Neto Rinpoche and Sherab Gyaltsen. But anyway, they're the teachers. But in this so-called friends who travel role, it's really more like Sangha activity than teacher activity. So if the teacher is the source of, you know, blessing and inspiration and methods, the Sangha is the activity. It's where we really like put it together. And what I found in that teacher role, I'll travel to a center and it kind of seems like something that could be ego building because you're representing the Dharma in that role. But actually it's more like, really getting torn apart. And it's not that the Sangha is mean, and it's not that they want to like tear you apart. It's that somehow there's this extra light being shined on just you as you're up there alone talking. And they are not shy, and they will just, you know, tell you straight up, like, you know, your nose bends to the left a little bit and
just staring at you for an hour.
They've been looking at you for an hour, and they're like, I can't get my eyes off your nose. It's like, it's crooked. Did you know that? You know?
Oh my God.
And, but you know, different levels too, of like things that you just can't hide. And so in the end, I think, there has to be a fundamental true happiness. Like you have to feel truly confident and in a place of surplus to go battle against the Sangha, like it's not battle against the Sangha at all. It's the most, I mean, it's like dear, close, heartfelt relationships, and people are honest. So I at first was like, oh, so I want to go teach. Like, I want to go do that. You know, like, oh man, I get to get a free flight somewhere and they're feed you. And then you're like, oh my God, that is not a free flight. That is like, you get your ass kicked. And really it's kind of, there's levels and there really is something, to me, it's almost like being called to go meet with the teacher. And so there's this jolt of blessing and purification. And for me personally. And so if I am invited somewhere, I actually, it, in some ways it's better to just not get invited somewhere. It's better to just live out my life, focus on what I'm doing here in Santa Fe, or go travel. And we also have a our local retreat center is Dakini Ranch, which is, is it 350 acres up in San Luis Valley? Spectacular views looking at the Sangre de Cristo mountain range. It's like gorgeous. Just these jaggedy 14,000 foot peaks.
It's wild out there.
Rattlesnakes and, you know,
cougars.
Cougars. We haven't encountered the bears and the mountain lions, but we've encountered lots of rattlesnakes. And that's our local group. So between Santa Fe and Denver, we're actually really a region. So when I think of my local Sangha, it actually includes Denver and
Albuquerque.
And Albuquerque. So Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Dakini Ranch, Denver. It's the mountain region, basically. And I'll be going up to Denver tomorrow to meet up with everybody. And
there's a weekend.
And then the following weekend after that, we're going to meet up at Dakini Ranch for a planning. It's more like a meeting where we plan out this year ahead or next couple years on logistical level. And it's... the other thing too is Sangha, through our activity at the Buddhist Center in New York, there's all these skills. You know, we try to rotate out the jobs. So obviously, if you have to move a piano, you get like the two strongest people and you move the piano. But things that are like, who's going to do the accounting? Who's going to do the this and the that? And you try to actually rotate the people through. You don't want anybody to get too comfy in their role. And what that means is that you get a chance to test out all these little things and see where you're good. And so on this administration level, I learned how to send emails, communicate, be there, you know, be responsible. And that helped me in my painting career. You know, there's a lot of the office work side, the promotional side, and even just this delicate balance, because there's no proselytizing. We don't try to convert anybody. And yet if we don't let people know we exist, I mean, then somebody else is going to have to go off to India and, you know, do absurd, outrageous things and come back, you know, with parasites for a year. So, you know, we should at least be in the phone book, you know. So somebody's got to make that phone call and put it in the phone book. Obviously, I'm metaphorically speaking. It's all on the internet and flyers and this and that. But all that stuff really helped me, because same thing with art. It's like there's this kind of like sellout thing that can happen as an artist of like, oh, you're promoting yourself too much. Or it's like, no, I'm trying to communicate what I'm doing so that if others have a connection, they can know how to find me.
And right. So, it's where do you want to go? It's not much about talking about all the things that you've done and tuning your horn.
Right.
But it's like, where do you want to go? You know, what's your path?
Projecting out and so we'd have a meeting in the center. It's like, where do we want to go? Okay, let's make some postcards. Let's do this. Let's do that. It's like practice run for, I've learned so many skills that way.